stepping off Massachusetts Avenue into Harvard Yard on a cold winter afternoon, I saw a man standing alone. "Hello," he said. "My name's Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president of these United States." There were plenty of, shall we say, unusual people hanging around Harvard Yard at that time, so grandiose pronouncements were not entirely unexpected. But this fellow was different than a street person with megalomania. He was wearing a handsome salt and pepper overcoat, his coiffed hair also salt and pepper, but the most arresting thing were his eyes, blue as the inside of a glacier, clear, with a direct calmness. Crow's feet, suggested someone who smiled. "Well, sir," I said, "good luck. Where might you be from?" "Georgia," he answered. "I'm paying a visit to this fine state, and I thought I'd come and see Harvard Yard." "That explains the accent," I said. "I like the way you say Harvard Yard. Very different than the local version, which is more like Harvard Yard." He smiled, those lines around his eyes creasing. "Are you really running for president?" I asked. "I am." "Do you think you have a chance?" "Perhaps," he said. "You see, as governor of Georgia, I've had some success in politics." "Jimmy Carter, is that right?" "That's right. One day you'll vote for me, perhaps?" We shook hands and I parted. Back then, it was much harder to check factoids. You couldn't just ask Siri. But Widener Library was right there, so I went to the reference desk and tracked down the name of the governor of Georgia. "I'll be damned," I muttered. "A peanut farmer from Plains, of all places, who also was captain of a nuclear submarine? Seriously?" By the time I went back to find him again, he was gone. This took place 50 years ago. This country has only existed for 250 years, so weird to say, that was back 20% of the nation's lifetime. It does seem like a far-gone, deep-past moment. A presidential candidate who calls himself Jimmy, just standing there by himself, saying hello. Fast forward. The man who beat Ted Kennedy for the nomination became president for one term. He was undone by a hostage crisis in Iran, outrageous interest rates at home, and Ronald Reagan. Few doubted his sincerity or honesty. He won a Nobel Prize, but many doubted his leadership. Our second brief encounter took place after he left the White House. He already was becoming the most exemplary former president, maybe in history, picking up hammers to help build Habitat for Humanity homes, donning a suit and traveling the world to encourage free and fair elections. He had come to Haiti to monitor the election of radical priest Jean-Bertrand d'Aristide. I was there as a journalist doing the same thing, though of course in a much less influential way, reporting in the dusty early morning from a hard town called Gonaïves. That night I joined a posse of young men from the infamous slum Cité Soleil, who walked their community's ballots through dark streets to the National Polling Center as bodyguards of paper and hope. The following day, President Carter held a press conference. He was at a fancy hotel called El Rancho. Years later, that hotel would be demolished by earthquake, many killed in what they thought was a safe place. But that day, the scene was luxurious and secure, far from where I had been the day and night before. I remember thinking that the water in the swimming pool was the same color as the eyes of a president. The Carter team reported that, in their view, the election had been remarkably free and fair. There were problems, but the results were legitimate, so the new government should be as well. After President Carter made his presentation, he mingled with press and staff, the same eyes and crow's feet, standing with the same humility I had sensed years earlier. I shook his hand, mentioned we had crossed paths long ago when he stood alone and greeted me in Harvard Yard. The crow's feet deepened. "That's a good memory of a moment that seems far in the past," he said. "So much has happened, yet we carry on."